It's 8:19, and this is Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. Good morning, I'm Mark Smith. Joining me by phone this morning is Arkansas 1st District Representative Rick Crawford. Good morning, Congressman.
Hey, Mark.
We got a pretty big event coming up tomorrow here on the ASU Jonesboro campus. Tell us about that.
You're right, it is. It's a very big event. In fact, it's one of only four in the nation. This is a Farm Bill field hearing that will take place tomorrow. That's going to be from 9 till noon at ASU at the Fowler Center. And, again, it's a pretty big deal because it's only one of four in the country. So we're going to have sort of, we are the, I guess, the southern Farm Bill field hearing. So we're going to have witnesses from Arkansas, Missouri, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Alabama. So we have a lot of producers from our district, in fact, that are scheduled to testify. Dow Brantley from England, Arkansas. You know, he farms rice, cotton, corn, soybeans. Randy Beach from over in Manila. He farms cotton, rice, corn, wheat, and soybeans. David Hundley from Jonesboro. He farms rice, corn, and soybeans. And we've got an aquaculture producer, Mike Freeze, in Keough. And then finally, a cattle producer from Mountain View, Dan Stewart, who will also be one of the Arkansas producers on the witness panel.
Now, these producers that are going to testify before this hearing, how are they selected?
Well, what we had to do, I mean, we needed a good cross-section of the geography of our district, number one. Number two, they had to be producers, so they're not representing a particular organization or any type of industry-type perspective except for actual production. So each one of these individuals are actual farmers, so they're not necessarily bringing a perspective of a farm organization per se. They may be members, but they're not going to be testifying on behalf of any particular organization. They're strictly bringing their own personal perspectives to the hearing. And we actually we're trying to get, I think we have 9 or 10 witnesses scheduled, and obviously I was trying to get all 10 of them as Arkansas producers, but in fairness, we had to open it up to the other states because it is a really big geography that we're trying to cover. So, but we did do well. We got 5 Arkansas producers, good diversity in this mix, and ultimately we just want to hear from individual producers about what some of the challenges are that they face and what suggestions they might have so that we can make farm policy work better for Arkansas producers and American producers.
And how did this hearing come together for, how did it come to be in Jonesboro?
Well, I've gotten to know the chairman of the Ag Committee real well over the last couple of years, and I have been lobbying pretty hard to try and bring a Farm Bill field hearing to our district, and we were number one on the list, believe it or not. I was very pleased that he saw the need for a hearing in our district and decided it'd be a good place. And so we're excited about that, but this is a culmination of probably a year's worth of work.
Now, you got these certain selected producers that are going to testify. Can anyone attend this event?
Absolutely, and I hope a whole lot of folks will attend. We expect really good turnout. And even though we have room for a total of 10 witnesses on the panel, you can still submit written comments, written testimony if you would like. And I would encourage producers, if they want to submit a written statement for the record, I would encourage them to do that. They can bring that written testimony with them to the field hearing, or they can submit it to us through the mail, or they can go online and submit their comments. And there's a website that you can do that if they're more comfortable doing that, and it's agriculture.house.gov/farmbill, and we'll have that information available. And if you want to share that with folks too, that's great. But this is, I believe, going to be a very well attended event, and it's a big deal for us in Arkansas to get one of four national field hearings in advance of this 2012 Farm Bill.
Now, can you submit written statements if you want, like after the fact, after the hearing's over?
Yes. In fact, you have till May 20th.
Okay.
To submit your comments for the record. So, you know, somebody wants to come and take notes and then maybe comment on some of the things that they heard, You know, that's also an option too. So you do have till May 20th to submit your comments for the record.
And that website again is agriculture.house.gov/farmbill.
Yes, sir. That's it.
All right. Now, this is just part of the process for drafting a new farm bill. Why do we need to redraft farm legislation periodically?
Well, this legislation is typically only a 5-year legislation, so it requires reauthorization, you know, much like any big piece of legislation. And that's just because times change and they want to make sure that we're addressing needs as they exist in a real market, in the marketplace and in this economy. So obviously we're going to work hard to try and reauthorize the farm bill this year. It's set to expire on September 30th, I believe. We've got a lot of work to do. We feel like in the House that we have a real shot at actually passing a farm bill here. So we're going to do everything we can to do that.
Is this going to be difficult to do in an election year with everything else going on?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of things in an election year. I don't know if people just think that you're supposed to stop legislating, but we're not. I mean, we're committed to trying to advance a farm bill, and I think the chairman is committed, and the members would love to see this come to the floor. So we're just going to work hard. We've got these one more field hearing after the Jonesboro event. And so I suspect we'll probably start to try to mark something up in the latter part of May after all the comments have been submitted.
All right. Now, this field hearing tomorrow, it's going to be at the Fowler Center. Give us the whens and wheres and what time and so on.
It's going to be in Riceland Hall at the Fowler Center starting at 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. and should run till noon. So, you know, 3-hour deal. So plan on staying for a while. This is should be some really good testimony that you'll hear. A good bunch of members that will be there to question the witnesses and really just try to get a firsthand perspective of what's going on at the turn row level.
All right, and this is tomorrow 9 to noon at the Fowler Center, Riceland Hall.
Yes, sir.
All right. What are some of the big changes? Are there major changes that are needed in a new farm bill?
Well, I think what we need to look at are, you know, market-based solutions. What can we do to help make sure that we do have a cheap, safe, abundant food supply in the United States, and make sure that we do have the conditions in place so that we're not in a position to have to be a net food importer. And so I think you're going to see a strong emphasis placed on trade. You know, we passed 3 free trade agreements last year in the House, and they were passed in the Senate. I believe, you know, the President signed them into a law. So we've got those 3 deals with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. And so we need to continue on with those type of agreements so that we can access the global marketplace. And I think that's really where a lot of emphasis needs to be placed with respect to the federal government and the role that they play in agriculture. Now, there are also a few other things that we're dealing with. Number one is just the fact that the budget is extremely tight. And so agriculture, for a lot of folks, looks like a place that they can make some deep cuts because we're experiencing historically high prices. But what we're not talking about, unfortunately, and of course we on the Ag Committee, we know this, but we're trying to communicate this to a broader audience, and that is, in spite of higher prices for crops, that is being offset to a large degree by higher input costs. And so the cost of producing our food has gone up incredibly over the last several years, and you can just go out into the gas station or the convenience store and see the gas prices are driving that, and certainly diesel prices are even higher than gas. So you can imagine that it is pretty costly to produce our food. And so that's one of the challenges we're going to face. And again, I mentioned global trade and market access to international markets. And then also, you know, we've got nutrition to deal with and conservation as well. So taking a look at the numbers that we have to deal with and what we're going to have to do to hammer out a farm bill that works for everybody, it's going to be a challenge, but that's the whole point of these field hearings.
All right, and again, the field hearing tomorrow, 9 to noon at the Fowler Center at ASU in Jonesboro. I want to ask you about a proposal that you made that actually got some national press coverage. You proposed a compromise agreement to allow an upper-income tax increase in exchange for passing a balanced budget amendment. Now, some of your fellow Republicans kind of blasted you for this. Why did you suggest this, and what do you think of the accusations that you're betraying somehow?
Well, I'm not betraying anybody. What I'm trying to do is express the will of the American people, and the will of the American people is that we need permanent structural reform in Washington if we're ever going to get our budget situation in check. And so the way this would work is we pass a balanced budget amendment first and foremost. That's the key to this whole deal, is that if we can't make our permanent structural reform take effect, then it won't do any good to tax anybody anymore. And certainly, you know, we don't want to tax anybody anymore, but the numbers are not on our side. And so if we're going to have to do that, it needs to be in the context of permanent structural reform. And to me, the best permanent structural reform that we can offer is a balanced budget amendment. And that's supported by probably 80% of the country. In fact, there are 31 states who have a balanced budget provision in their state constitutions. And so the reality is, in this economy and the sentiment of most Americans, they expect Congress to balance their budget, and further, they expect them to do it every year. And if we just look at a budget proposal or look at, you know, a tax and cut proposal that may, you know, implement potentially long-term tax increases for short-term spending cuts, that doesn't fix our problem. Our problem has to be looked at in the context of long-term and making sure that not only does it bind the hands of this Congress, but making sure that the hands of future Congresses are bound, because all these statutory measures that we engage in from one Congress to the next, they can be easily sidestepped. But if you have a balanced budget amendment, that forces Congress to operate within the confines of a prescribed spending limit. And that's really what we need to focus on, is the fact that Congress needs to rein in spending and have a fixed number based on this constitutional amendment.
Now, of course, you're up for re-election this year, and you are going to face some opposition. It's just a question of who that will be. Was this a factor in this proposal, or is this any kind of a risky move?
Well, I don't know if it's risky or not. I think that, as I said before, you know, you're elected to a two-year term, and I think the voters expect us to work for 2 years. And just because it's an election year doesn't mean that we stop trying to offer solutions to the problems that we face in this country. And to me, this is a viable solution, and the key component is the balanced budget amendment, and I think that people are viewing it in that context, and we're starting to get considerably more positive reinforcement on this thing. And member to member, you know, folks understand that we're going to have to understand that revenues are going to be part of the equation, but how we address that is going to make all the difference in the world. So if we're continuing to do business in Washington as they have for decades, and that is to increase taxes with no regard for long-term spending controls, then we're going to be right back here next year having this same discussion. But what we need to do is focus on the long term and implement a spending solution that keeps future Congresses in check and makes them spend within their means. And to me, the best way to do that is a balanced budget amendment.
Now, as a U.S. representative and all the things you do, I imagine one of the more rewarding parts of your job is recommending students to various service academies. And you got several students from our district that have been accepted for this honor.
We did, and I'm very proud of these five individuals. We were able to make nominations to the service academies, all three of them, and five of them received appointments. And it'll take me just a minute, but I'd like to read the list, because we have five stellar individuals. Jordan Reed from Cabot, he's seventh in a class of 686 students, and he will be attending West Point. Weston White from Blyville will graduate first in his class. He was lieutenant governor at Boise State. He's going to the Naval Academy in Annapolis. Sully Bigger from Walnut Ridge, first in his class. And he will also be attending the Naval Academy. Sean Gavin, also from Cabot, he is another outstanding student, member of the National Honor Society. He'll be attending the Air Force Academy. in the Colorado Springs, and then finally Jack Baltz from Pocahontas. He's a class president, ranked in the top 10% of his class. He's a letterman, three-sport letterman, and he'll be attending West Point as well. So real proud of these young men and what they've accomplished in their high school career and what they'll go on to accomplish as they serve their country and attend those various service academies. So congratulations to those five guys, and they've done a great job.
Yeah, certainly want to congratulate these future cadets. One of the things, just real quickly, we've got about a minute left, wanted to ask you about the Supreme Court. Of course, been hearing arguments regarding part of the health care law that would require individuals to buy health insurance. Decision expected maybe by June. If the court strikes down this provision, does the whole health care law collapse?
Well, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I couldn't speculate on that. I think, you know, they're making the argument on the individual mandate, and that's certainly where probably this whole thing turns. But also something that's of concern to me is the employer mandate and what that does to job creation. And so it'll be interesting to see what the verdict is. But in the interim, we're going to keep on doing what we can do to make sure that we're in a position to repeal the most onerous components of this law, and hopefully at some point we'll be able to repeal it and replace it with a more market-based solution.
All right, Congressman Rick Crawford, thanks for your time today.
You bet. Thank you.
Congressman Rick Crawford joining us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KSU Jonesboro.